It's about 7 o'clock on a Sunday night, and I've come around to my brother Matt's place. I want to introduce you to him because he's just recently become really obsessed with his lawn. Do you remember the day that it got laid?
Yeah, I laid it with Tim. It was a big day, did it all in the day, back and front. Then we just watered it in.
What does that mean?
Put the sprinkler on it and have a beer and watch the water go in.
Yeah, okay.
Down the front there where the postman drives along and everyone walks on isn't real good. No, I'll definitely look at other people's lawns and compare them to mine and ask them. If they've got a good lawn, I'll ask them how they get it so good.
This has got to be the best lawn on the street, right?
Oh, I'd like to think so. That's why I moved into a small street, not much competition. Next door, it's a bit competitive. His lawn's pretty good. Yeah, you can't see it much. He's got the roses in front of his lawn, but he keeps it pretty sharp too.
Tell me about the other ones. What do you think of them?
Oh, they got trees and stuff all over their lawn. Doesn't get much sun.
What about this guy down here?
Yeah, Nico. He's got more weeds than grass, I think.
Hello, you're listening to Off Track, and I'm not Joel Werner. Mike Williams here, and I'll be filling in for Joel over the next couple of weeks. Today on the show, I thought I'd take just one step outside and onto the lawn. Our relationship with grass is all but clean cut, and I'd like to explore that today with lawn lovers, a historian, and a professional grass curator. And we might even have time for a game of backyard cricket.
When Australia first federated in 1901 and the states all came together, one of the first things they did was develop a coat of arms. And the coat of arms is very much what we see today. It's a emu on one side and a kangaroo on the other with a crest in the middle. But originally, that symbol sat on a mound of grass.
Do you think that what they were thinking was, let's have a patch of lawn?
Absolutely. That was absolutely a patch of lawn.
Jody Frawley is an environmental historian at Sydney Uni.
In around 1910, 1911, there was a popular movement to have that changed over from the mound of grass to a wreath of wattle, of golden wattle. But what's interesting about the mound of grass is that even in that very early period of federation, we already had an attachment to lawns and beautifully kept grass. One of the big changes with lawns comes in after the Second World War, when we get things like the Victor mower, which was designed in 1952 and becomes more widely available. And lawn mowers make it much easier for you to have the beautiful backyard and quarter acre block, in particular that lovely lawn out in the front of the house that welcomes people in.
So was the lawn a status symbol?
The lawn was absolutely a status symbol and absolutely a part of that whole change in the post-war period where Australia became a middle-class kind of nation, where suburbs become very important and the lawn very much is about, it says something about the way people care for their domestic space.
Yeah. What do you want to know?
I want to see what grass you've got.
Yeah, we've got Kaikuyu grass here. Now, with any of these grasses, Kaikuyu, Cooch, Buffalo, they're all warm season grasses. That's what we typically have in our lawns in Australia. Look and feel is in my lawn is fantastic because it's been cared for very well.
Of course.
There's no weeds in it.
Just touch it for me.
Okay.
And just describe.
I'm having a real good touch now, Mike.
Yeah, okay. And tell me how it feels.
Yeah, well, it just feels like a carpet. It's beautiful. It's like, if we lie down on it now, we're lying down on a nice green carpet.
This is Jerry Fairman.
Okay, look, we can deal with any grass. Any grass looks good if it's cared for well.
Jerry owns a specialist lawn care company called Lawn Green. They turn tired old grass
into lush green lawn.
I think that's his slogan. House into a home type thing. You turn grass into a lawn.
That's it, yep.
He used to do mowing and landscaping, but a few years ago he decided to specialise in lawn care. That's high-end weeding and feeding.
Generally, when people call us in, they're in their darkest hour.
And you fly in and save the day. Are your customers, are they just lazy?
What they're paying for is a luxury. Our service is by no means a necessity.
Yeah. So these might be people at the other end of the spectrum. Oh. They're so keen on their lawn that they feel a professional should take control.
Most of our customers.
So they're somewhere between lazy and in love with their lawn, somewhere along on that spectrum.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I love being outside. I mean, I love seeing people's lawns go from crappy, weed-ridden, sparse grass to a lush green lawn.
It's got a ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of pleasure derived from that, and it's also I just love doing great things with people's lawns.
I don't want to turn this show into Gardening Australia, but later on in the program, Jerry's got some tips he can share with you on how to make your lawn look good. But before that, I've got to ask, is there much competition about who's got the best lawn?
Oh, look, when we first moved into the area, the lady across the road, she's pretty anal about a lawn. You could tell it was on for young and old, and I think I told her one summer, I said, let's have a bit of a competition, and anyway, I can't remember who won, but I'm sure, I've always got the best-looking lawn in the street.
People do tend to look over the fence at what their neighbours are doing or are not doing. So there's often a lot of complaints in communities about when people are not keeping their front lawns properly, when they get overgrown, or where people put vegetable gardens into their front gardens, like a lot of our post-war migrant communities did. So there's a lot of community and neighbourhood kind of policing of standards and behaviours.
So why were people policing it back then?
I think it's very much about that cultural norms.
So if someone didn't subscribe to that, they were seen as different, and rather than being outcast, they were pressured to become like everyone else.
Yes.
Why is that? Why wouldn't... But maybe is it because they had to? Like if you're living on a street where one person is different and they're wrecking the street, you don't have much of a choice. Is that it?
That's exactly the sort of way that sort of surveillance and domestic discipline works, is exactly by the gaze of the neighbour. You can get situations where someone might come and say, can I help with your lawn?
I know of people who have come home and their lawn has been mowed.
That's right.
I don't think that's uncommon.
I don't think it is either. I think, yeah... I don't have a lot of answers for that one, Mike.
Does anyone have an answer for that sort of behaviour? Vigilante lawn grooming masked as a good deed by people hell-bent on lawn conformity? But considering our history and the attachment, can you blame them? I'm not sure. I still think it's pretty rude. Is AstroTurf selling out?
Selling out on the cultural idea of having a lawn?
Yeah.
No more, I think, than moving from pen and paper to computers.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't appeal to me, and there will be many people out there that sort of going to an artificial lawn won't appeal to.
But isn't part of that history around maintaining and keeping and the quarter acre block, that effort and that work, doesn't that make it part of what is so rewarding about a lawn?
I think for some people it does, but I think for others it's a labour.
For my older brother and I, mowing the lawn was a weekend ritual. For me, getting to mow was a rite of passage. It was a big deal being trusted enough not to stuff it up, but why was it such an important thing in the first place?
All right, I can remember walking up to the back shed. And you open the doors and you hit the side of the shed, trying to shake all the spiders off the shed. There's always full of spiders in there. Pull the mower out.
Wheel it down the hill and put the catcher on, which was sometimes harder than it looked. Then unscrew the petrol lid. For some reason, there was never any petrol in it. Get the funnel and pour it without spilling it all over yourself. Then there was the test.
Try and start it for about 10 minutes.
And I don't know why, but starting a lawnmower in as few goes as possible is important.
You get it started and you start mowing on the highest blade. At Mulander, there was always different areas, like you're above the pool and then you had to open the gate and then you got to do the other area, wheel it down under the fern house and over the drain. Everything was a nightmare there. Around the corner, and then you got to unlock the gate, walk through, and then it started the steep front lawn, mowing that and the Lucas's side there. And then the other side, the front lawn too, that was steep as well. You just mow it, right? It just never seemed to stop mowing. It just take forever, that job. When I finished, I just put the grass clippings in the bin, shut all the gates, put the mower away and go inside to have a shower. Probably wash the car then.
It seems to me that over the years, our attitudes towards grass and different types of grass and the lawn has changed, but some things have stayed the same very much so. Why do you think that is?
I think that cultures around plants and our relationships with our environments change, and they are constantly under that process of change and adaptation. I mean, we've had situations for like that lovely example of the lawnmowers in the post-war period, where you get a great big change with that technological boom in the post-war period that we might think of as purely being about machines, but we need to think about that in terms of our human relationships, both to our machines and our environments. And those things are constantly on the move. These days, there are many communities in Australia that have started to do urban planting and urban food gardens in their footpath areas because of the exact reason that they are commons. But what that means is that you lose those lawns.
With the rise of these footpath gardens, is the traditional lawn as we know it in danger?
I think there's been a very big push to endanger it in a lot of ways. Certainly when Australia was in the throes of the drought, and people were asked to reduce their water consumption, the first place that the legislators go to is asking people to reduce their water consumption for their lawns. So there's been a big push to stop using water on lawns in that way.
Jody tells me about one research project where people had to keep diaries documenting their water consumption during the drought.
And what was interesting about that was how attached people were to their lawns, how they took photographs every day of lawns dying and going brown and turning to dust. If we're using things like water as if for on our lawns, as if we have endless supplies of it, people can build up attachments to what they see as just part of their daily lives. Sometimes that's the way people experience them. They experience the drought through the fact that their lawn is dying and they are no longer allowed to water it.
What, so you mean if people in the suburbs, in cities, yeah, could relate somehow on a level to people in the bush who were doing it really tough during the drought period because their lawn was dying?
Certainly in terms of climate change at the moment, people equate that change in weather, what they can experience and see, to a shift in their understanding about, well, maybe climate change is actually real.
So even with things like climate change that is not linked in any way to how green your grass is, people will inadvertently make these links.
That's right.
Even if there's no cause and effect there whatsoever.
Even if there's no cause and effect. I'm not disagreeing with you about that at all. Please don't think that I don't understand climate change. I do, but we're not talking about logical stuff. We're talking about
lawns, front and back. Lawn Love on Off Track today. I'm Mike Williams. Although sometimes illogical, there's no denying the deeply rooted affection and history of this sprawling green carpet. Probably most important about the lawn as an outdoor space is that they're a place for fun, a place to dream.
Oh! Oh, we play quite regularly, more in the summer months, but we like our backyard cricket. Where's the ball? Basically small hits, big hits, depending how many people we have. Just try and rotate the batting, have some good fun, playing some shots.
You go in the bush over there?
Nah, mate, I already checked there.
What are the rules here?
So we got six and out over the pool, over the fence on the full. Through the fence, there's a four, hitting the fence four, one hand, one bounce. We've got electric wicket behind the clothesline, six and out over the neighbour's fence. We've also got six and out of a hit window in the house.
If you hit a window?
Yeah. Mum won't be happy at that, so that's why I have the rule.
Oh, here it is.
Oh, sick. My name's Joseph, I'm in year 11 at Marist Eastwood, and this is my backyard.
Tell me about your lawn here.
Yeah, so there's lots of dirt patches. I don't know what happens to the lawn. Grass is getting quite long. I guess it just makes for a more interesting game. We've got the dirt patches, more grassy areas. I guess it's more variation, you know.
Funny bounces.
Oh, yeah, that's good to play. Depends on how, just what we want to play.
Do you mow your lawn here?
No, I don't. Dad mows the lawn.
Mate, what are you doing? You're letting the team down.
Yeah, he's not a good groundsman.
You should be your own groundsman.
Oh, he won't let me. He maintains that it's his grass.
Be controlling over it?
Yeah.
It's his lawn?
Yeah.
When you're playing down here and you're having a bowl, do you ever pretend to be someone? Like, who's your favourite bowler?
Oh, I think at the moment, Mitchell Johnson's probably my favourite bowler.
Yeah, he's solid.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sherry hasn't been selected recently, but he's good to bowl.
Oh, he's got it!
Hey!
In the pool, and Philip is six and out. I wonder how many Richie Beno impersonations have been tried in backyards around the country. Speaking of Richie, when you think of the best-kept grass in Australia, I reckon you could look no further than the SCG. Tom Parker is the head groundsman.
Yes, I'm fortunate enough to be the curator of the Sydney Cricket Ground. I'm in charge of everything green and growing inside the fence and on our practice wicket areas and our garden areas as well.
Do you have to prepare the grass differently depending on the game, the sport that's coming up here?
Yeah, that's correct. For cricket, for instance, the outfield is cut down on 10 millimetres, looking for, you know, good, fast, even outfield for the game of cricket.
You know the exact measurement of the grass?
Yes, that's correct. We set our mowers to the millimetre, and that's how it's done. And it's cut every day, usually twice a day in the summer.
Great. Okay, this is kind of like a lawnmower's paradise for gear that you've got here. Is this kind of like the Rolls Royce of lawnmowers?
Yes, it is. This is what we call a fairway mower. This is one we cut the outfield with, so it's going all the time. So in the summer months, it's out there every day cutting that ground.
It's a heavy-duty piece of machinery. It's quite big, four wheels. You wouldn't call this a ride-on. This is a sit-in.
Yes, it is. It's got nearly like a lounge chair sitting on it, but air suspension and all. It's got all the bells and whistles, and, it's a magic machine.
Yeah. Anything else you could just show me here while we're standing here?
This is called a ProCore. We use this for aerating the ground. At the back of that there, we have a very important piece of equipment. It's the Super Sopper that a lot of people have probably seen on TV over the years after we've had rain and we've taken the covers off. Then we go over to here. We have another mower, which is called a triplex.
Lawns, cricket, cutting vehicles. This is all getting a bit blokey, isn't it? I asked Jodie what she thought about lawn gender stereotypes.
You can quickly draw a kind of stereotype of you know, the inside space being the female domestic space and the outside space being the domain of the male. But I actually think that is not probably as straightforward as that. That many women, particularly as mowers become lighter, things like electric mowers, you can actually have women taking charge of that part of the domestic space. And gardens, particularly gardens and lawns together, have been spaces that women have been incredibly active in designing and keeping, and ways that women are able to be in those spaces just as much as men can.
Why do you think in this case that the domestic outdoor space was, the stereotype is male?
Where you have an inside, there's an outside. And if you're going to see one as feminine, then one or the other automatically becomes male. You know, I think there's the whole attachment to machinery and technology, which has often been seen as a male sphere. But I like to think that those binaries can be very easily disrupted.
We're down the southern end of the Sydney Cricket Ground. About to walk onto the hollow ground, and we'll take you out to the centre pitch area so you can see with your own eyes what it's all about.
Okay, great. So what sort of grass is this?
This here, what we're looking at is rye grass. It's a couch base underneath, and we oversow it in the winter months with a grass called rye grass, which keeps us this green appearance right through the winter.
Walking on this grass, it's so smooth. You know, you could moonwalk on this grass.
Yes, it is, and that's testimony to what we did in 2010 to make sure there's no hills and hollows and everything out here, that everything's an even grade all around the ground and it's mown all year round. I've always, since I was a little child, wanted to work outdoors. I feel very privileged to be in this role. It's, you know, when you look at, from memory, I think I'm the seventh or eighth curator in the history of this great ground, so it's a very important role, and I'm very fortunate to be here. I think it's a place steeped in history, and I treat it as like my backyard.
The curator of the SCG, one of the most famous sporting grounds in the world, treats the ground like his backyard lawn. Could there be any higher guarantee for care?
The new Parliament House actually has a roof of lawn, an expanse of lawn that runs right over the top of it. And I think that more than anything shows a link to our domestic spaces, our love of the quarter acre block, our desire that in Australia we have a democratic right to home and garden and environments of lawns.
The thing about the lawn is it's this manicured outdoor space where things happen, life.
Absolutely.
Life happens.
That's exactly right. Life happens, children grow up, it's where parties are held and, you know, good old Aussie barbecues happen in our backyards. We have a whole range of cultural life of Australia. Just the everyday ordinariness of our everyday lives is often conducted in these sorts of low-key environments, but, you know, that are deceptive, because lawns, no matter what, will take a certain amount of care, even if we have that front yard that's very manicured and the backyard is a place where we kind of live, for the want of a better way of putting it. It still requires a certain amount of care to look after. It's about pride of space, and it's that attachment. People really love their lawns.
Before I head, those lawn tips from Jerry. And his number one tip is to mow it.
We recommend once a week in summer and 2 to 4 weeks in winter.
Make sure you don't forget about winter because of those autumn leaves that fall and create a ground cover. Your grass needs sun. Also, beware of rakes.
We don't recommend any raking because that tears the grass out.
And I'm sure you've heard of scalping. I'm not talking about tickets.
Scalping is a bad habit because Kaikuyu and Cooch, those sort of grasses have underground runners. The effect of the warm weather and plus a bit of fertilising and watering, the grass repairs itself really quickly. That will not happen in the case of buffalo. If you shave buffalo back to dirt, basically you kill your buffalo lawn.
Watering is also really important.
Heavily, so in other words, for an hour at a time, but infrequently, so that you get that water going down deep, and that encourages deep roots, and the deep roots encourages drought hardiness.
And probably the most commonly asked question, how high should you mow your lawn?
In summertime, around an inch high is a good mowing height.
In winter, a little bit higher, probably an inch and a half.
We increase the surface area, so there's more chance of photosynthesis occurring, so that keeps the grass greener for longer.
Many thanks to Jody Frawley from Sydney University, speaking to us from Brisbane, Matt and Nick Williams, Jerry Fairway from Lawn Green, who turns tired grass into lush lawn, You heard from Tom Parker, the curator and head groundsman at the SCG. And we played cricket in Joseph Brophy's backyard. Hope your dad picks up his act.
Oh, he's got it!
Hey!
For more info on today's program, head to the RN website and just look for Off Track. I'm Mike Williams. Join me next week as we delve into the history of the whippersnipper. Just joking. Bye for now.